present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz, and we start with a cutting from The Sun, read by Corrie Caulfield.
Following a series of burglaries at a community centre in Croydon, staff put up a notice saying nothing left to steal. But thieves broke in the next day and left a note saying, just checking.
Thanks to Ted Shepherd of Thelwell for that. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome first on my right, Francis Ween, and returning to the News Quiz, Eve Pollard. And opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Jeremy Hardy. Francis, your first question. Who insisted that the Tories coming back to power at the next election wasn't a rum and black proposal?
I think I know this, because we are in fact in Bournemouth, and on my way here I noticed there are all these hundreds of people with little laminated tags around their necks. They'd been electronically tagged and let out into the community. And off they went to hear Widdicombe saying that she wanted to send anyone under the age of 40 to prison, if at all possible, on magnificent form. I mean, she is the Conservative Party's answer to Charlie Dimmock, really, isn't she? is it Changing Rooms, that programme she does, where they go and remake people's houses? And they had this extraordinary set that was entirely constructed out of old patio doors and double glazing and things, with 1970s disco lighting. And then Anne Widdicombe strode on, stomping around and yelling at the top of her voice, and said that there should be zero tolerance the day after Portillo said, we like tolerance. But she's right. I think she's absolutely right. Did you see that extraordinary programme last Sunday about William and Fionn? And there was Haig and Sebastian Coe in the back of a car, and they never once put their seatbelt on, criminal offence. And then Haig drove up into these hills and parked and started swilling bottles of beer. Presumably drove back afterwards. I think he should have been breathless.
The best line in that programme came from William Haig's mother. Do you hear? When she was they were talking about his childhood. And she said, yes, we were a bit worried about William when he was young, but we hoped that when he went to university, he'd swing the other way.
True, it's what the woman said. It's his mother.
There's a group called Tories Against Hypocrisy, which has been sending out emails widely, outing a number of senior Conservatives whom we can't name. But seemingly, a large number of the hierarchy of the Conservative Party, according to this group, are actually gay. And this is clearly going to bring disgrace and shame on the gay community to know that prominent gay people are. Practicing conservatives.
But you notice when you ever see William Haig, it's always with Fionn. It's never with Fionn Haig. So they're going to call it Fionnade. You're going to have this sparkly stuff that actually doesn't make very much noise.
She's a goddess.
I was watching Haig during the week, and I thought, I've seen this face before, and I realised I'd been seeing just before at a Toyota ad, and he's just like, he looks exactly like those dummies in cars that hit a brick wall and then. Or Cadbury's Smash. It's that same sort of head, isn't it?
In his speech at the Tory conference, William Haig insisted the Conservatives are ready to govern again. Those in the hall couldn't help but be impressed by an impassioned speech from a man who most believe will be the next Conservative Prime Minister. Yes, Michael Portillo spoke on Tuesday. Haig won over his Bournemouth electorate as he told them he was ready for it next autumn. He was ready for it in May. He was ready for it right now, he said. But Fionn pointed out there wasn't time. He had to go and deliver a speech to the conference. 2 points to Francis. Eve, why is one mollycoddled American child being given designer jeans at the age of 6?
Well, this is the story that's caused all this controversy about designer babies. A couple in Colorado had a daughter called Molly, who's got some rare disease, and the only way that Molly could be cured is to have a transplant from a child exactly like her. So they went to have IVF, and they pick and mix amongst the embryos till they got the perfect baby.
Yes, absolutely right.
There is an opinion being drafted on this by the Human Embryology Fertilisation OFTOS body.
The idea of deliberately using a child as a life-saving device was widely criticised by British politicians, who pointed out you'd never see Tony Blair pulling a cheap stunt like that. So, 2 points to Eve. Jeremy, who may find tolerance and respect for all too high a price to pay, but will make those getting high pay the price?
This would be the Conservative Party. Now, if you took a random cross-section of the population of this country and you put about 500 to 800 people of them in a hall, having screened out all the ones who are active members of the Conservative Party, and then you said to those people, please welcome Anne Widdecombe, the noise you would hear echoing around the room would be, oh, God. But for the Conservative Party, it's just marvellous, because she's a character in the sense that it would be better if she were fictional. And she's made a number of preposterous comments, but her big coup de grace was this drugs nonsense. She's ignoring the fact that there are many people in medical need of cannabis, people like Anne Widdecombe, for example. It all doesn't sit well, because Portillo had made this quite nice speech, very, very pro-gay speech, which, of course, is very welcome. So bizarrely, Anne Widdecombe finds herself to the right of the Police and the Telegraph this week. And it's all got very embarrassing, because Portillo's trying to be all nice and cute and tidy and make quiche for everyone.
Michael Portillo called on the party to show the country a more tolerant and caring face, and his party responded with a close-up of Anne Widdecombe. The contents of Miss Widdecombe's speech have been criticised by drug groups as unworkable, asylum representatives as extreme, and by Jack Straw as namby-pamby. Alan, your piece of music.
Get up, stand up, jump, jump, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up,
get up, stand up,
don't give up the fight.
Life is your right.
Get up, stand up, we can't give up.
Alan, whose rights have received their passage?
Well, they're ours. We now no longer need to go to Strasbourg if somebody looks sideways at our dog or our children's ears are clipped by forward-thinking Conservative teachers. It's all shifted to here. This huge load of Euro jurisprudence has landed in our courts, and we are all, each of us, fully entitled to treat ourselves as human beings, which is a very rare thing in Europe, most of Europe having spent most of its life last century not treating anybody as human beings. But now we're required to do it, and English law, it's not been bypassed, it's simply that there is an alternative now to justice.
Also, they had those full-page adverts, the government took out these huge adverts.
By child.
A little poem on the Human Rights Act. It was all, I am not very old, but I think I know what's fair, like standing up for friends and giving work to Sherry Blair. And he's won some sort of trophy for this, I believe.
Well, the thing is that we used to have rights, and the Tories abolished them all. We used to have things like the Magna Carta, and now the only thing you can do is graze your geese on common land and take things back to Marks and Spencer's.
It's the Human Rights Act, incorporating the European Convention on Human Rights into English law, which came into effect this week. Many will gain hope from this incorporation into British law of the right to a life, particularly all those internet users who've been hoping to get one for years. Scores at the end of round one are everybody 4 points. And we start round two with a letter reprinted in the Mail on Sunday.
Dear Mr. Reynolds, your council tax benefit has been stopped because there's been a change in your circumstances. The change is because you are dead.
Thanks to Mr. Stiller Ilford for spotting that. Francis, who had a moving news story this week?
Oh, I think this is the 10 o'clock news, because ITV abandoned news at 10, and then they said they were going to bring it back, but only for about 3 nights a week, and the BBC, suddenly, at a moment's notice, they pretend they've been planning this for years, is going to introduce its own 10 o'clock news next week, and there's part of some huge reorganisation that they're going to do it on the radio as well, on Radio 4, could affect us. Because I think the PM programme will now come at 9 in the morning after the Today programme, or the World Tonight, as it will be renamed. Our programme, which is now going to go out on Friday lunchtime, is going to be called the News at 10 quiz. And every week you just ask this question, does anyone know what time the TV news is? To which the answer is, no one has a clue. But that's about the size of it.
Exactly.
It would be better if all the stations had news on at 10 o'clock, everyone would have to watch the news. Because that's the trouble with it, there is too much choice on television. It would be better if there was just BBC Two and Radio 4. And then you just listen, because on Radio 4...
It's true. Yeah, it's
Because the whole point...
Any questions is brought to you today from the Scout Up Bournemouth. I've never seen such blatant audience.
Because the point of Radio 4 is you just listen to absolutely everything from the moment you get up and say, and now on down your way, we go to Skegness for absolutely no reason and speak to some people.
Why is it that I listen to Radio 4 all through the day, like any other mental invalid? I take my baths late and listen to Woman's Hour. And Woman's Hour is always now about dysmenorrhea and surgical disorders of the lower woman.
No, it's about bashing men. Woman's Hour is all about bashing men. That's what it's there
for. Yeah, well, it's very rotten if you're in the bath. I can tell you, if you're a bloke, watching yourself shrivel and listening to people talking about men.
And then there's that great programme called Veg Talk. Comes back for series after series. And it's just two greengrocers talking
about
vegetables.
Prince Charles is a great fan, I understand.
The BBC has announced that the 9 o'clock news will be moved to 10 o'clock. In direct competition with ITV, Greg Dyke assured viewers that the quality of the programme will be maintained, as there'll still be a Burke reading the news at 10. So, 2 points to Francis Eve, whose presidential pitches didn't get past first base.
Presidential pitches didn't get first base. I suppose, are you talking about Al Gore and George W?
Yes.
And this amazing face-off they had, which was their first debate, where the only exciting thing is to see who actually puts their foot in it first. The thing is, Gore is well ahead because he kissed his wife passionately about 3 months ago, and Americans haven't got over it.
And he hasn't got his tongue back yet, so of course he can't.
But Bush did awfully well, because I don't think he said a single bit of gibberish all the way through. I mean, he wasn't good in the normal sense. I mean, Gore bombarded him with facts and statistics, and Bush just said, oh, that's math, as if maths was some wicked thing dreamed up in Washington that no one had told him about. But he didn't take it, because he does these Bushisms almost every speech he makes. He says, you can't take the high horse while claiming the low road, and this sort of thing. And no one has a clue what he's talking about. But he managed to avoid all that, so it's been hailed as a huge success for him. Old W.
Do you remember when his father took on Gary Hart? And Gary Hart had umpteen affairs, and Hart was opposing George Bush pair. And the running slogan then was, in your heart, you know it's Bush, but in your bush, you know it's Hart.
I'm shocked and disappointed.
Yes, I'm going back. Going back on the water now.
In this country, 89 people watched the debate on BBC News 24, so record viewing figures for them at last. 2 points to Eve. Alan, what's suddenly affordable?
It's a dull question. It's about cheap cars.
Yes.
And suddenly Ford look as though they've been affected by... I wish I was doing the one about the shepherd with a hole in his dentures. Do you think that's going to come up?
Why not answer that instead?
I'd much rather... Well, OK, this one's about cheap Ford cars, 2,000 quid off. Why should I advertise them? They're all junk anyway. No, the one... I like the bloke. He was called Laurie Collins, and he was a... He was a shepherd. And his teeth fell out. And he went off to get dentures. And when he got his dentures, and he couldn't whistle after his dogs. And his dogs wandered around wherever it was, Galashiels, rounding up old ladies and putting him into... So he went back to the dentist, and the dentist drilled a hole in his front tooth, and he can now whistle. It's...
Of course, Jack Straw proposes that there won't be sheepdog trials anymore, that the sheepdog will just be jailed by magistrates. I can't believe you clapped such a terrible joke. I was ashamed as I was saying it.
They clapped out of nostalgia, Jeremy.
Ford have announced reductions of up to £2,000 in the price of basic models, so motorists can now not only afford a new car, but a couple of gallons of four-star to put in it. Ford deny they're going down market, despite rumours that the Ford Escort is now to be renamed the Ford Looking for a Good Time, Are You, Sir? So I'll give Alan 3 points, two for answering the question I asked, and one for answering a completely different one as well. Which means the scores, thrillingly, at the end of round two are Francis and Eve with 8 points, but Alan and Jeremy nosing into the lead with 9. And we begin round three with an item spotted in The Independent.
A Danish prostitute has been allowed to deduct the cost of breast implants on her taxes after an appeal. The tax board originally rejected her claim, saying it was difficult to differentiate professional and private use of her breasts.
Thanks to Richard Crowe of Tame for that. Francis, why will it soon be Auf Wiedersehen for Memories of 1966 and all that?
Well, it's not to do with the football match.
It is. Well, it's more specific than that.
Well, this weekend, or if you're listening to the repeat today, I suppose, England playing Germany at Wembley, and it's the last encounter. After that, they're going to pull down Wembley in the hope that they can get the next Olympics. But beyond that, I can't tell you the half-time score, unless you're listening to the repeat, in which case it's 1-1. I believe Michael Owen scored for England.
Michael Owen is our only decent footballer in the country, and the only reason he's any good is he's about 11 years old. And he's just got boundless energy, because he's just full of sunny delight and pickled onion monster munch. He's just chemicaled off his tits, he is. He's raving round the pitch. I'll get it.
I was in Wembley during the war. We lived at 4 Copeland Avenue, and I was there when the night the Ferry Aviation Works got bombed. And my grandfather, who worked for the ARP, I mean, he was an old man, worked for the ARP, and he had a helmet with Dig Ear for Dave on the top of his helmet because he thought he'd be buried in rubble. It's true.
Of course, in those days, we had to have powdered egg, didn't we? And there was no icing. We had to melt down the railings and pour it over the cake.
I could.
Cold War was done on a film set in America. It never happened. Ask David Irving. The whole thing was faked.
Kevin Keegan has announced a change in tactics from the usual 4-4-2 formation. For this match, he's getting up very early in the morning and putting a giant beach towel over the opposing goal mouth. Eve, whose hopes of a win in court bit the dust when they were taken to the cleaners by a rival.
Dyson invented this Hoover that doesn't actually get your house clean, but it doesn't need a bag. So it means that you can't blame the bag having been full when the house doesn't get clean. And then Hoover came along and did a sort of copycat version, and Dyson won the case, I think, didn't they? And Hoover is now hoovering up the sort of millions to pay him, I suppose.
Dyson won on the grounds that he had invented bagless carpet cleaners. But I'm sure I used to have a thing years ago called a Eubank. And that was bagless.
Did it have a lisp? I can't do Eubank impressions.
Shall I do you now, sir?
Oh, well done.
There is an official autobiography or biography of James Dyson. I'm trying to remember who wrote it.
Oh, stop it. It was my son.
Alan is a paid agent of the Dyson organisation, so you have to watch it.
We got a free Hoover and the bloody thing cut the free Dyson.
You had a free Dyson.
The thing about a Dyson is it is extraordinarily powerful, and it's great if you want a whole of your carpet inside your Hoover. If you're moving, for example, and then you move into your new place and you press blow and out it comes. It's like something from Ghostbusters. It's extraordinary.
2 points to Eve. Jeremy's, who's coming up with a wizard plan for single mothers?
This must be Harry Potter lady. What's her name?
J.K. Rowling.
No, that's not her name, that's her signature. What's her name?
Joanne.
Joanne, okay. But why do people do that? It's stupid. Her name is Joanne Rowling, clearly. Or Joanne K. Rowling. It's not J.K. That's a middle name. That's a christening formality. That's not your... E.E. Cummings and T.S. Eliot and T.P. McHenry. I don't hold with that, I tell you. But... And I don't mind who knows it. Somebody will write in saying, thank God, somebody has had the courage to speak out at last. Am I the only person who hates this preposterous tendency? My name is Paul Johnson. Good night. J.K. Rowling wrote books when her children were very little and she was very tired and stressed and thought, well, bloody hell, I'm knackered. I'm not going to try and write anything proper. I'll write kids' books. Now, that's unfair. Apparently, they're very, very good books, but she wrote them without a bloke there to say, where do we keep the kitchen towels and things like that? She managed to get all this done, and so she's given 500 grand to the National Council for One-Parent Families to help them campaign against the Tories. We've got this bizarre new give more money to the people who don't need it. Same as Tony Blair's idea that schools should spend more money on the kids with no problems who are doing fine. So this is the idea, you spend the money where it's not needed. So, and if you see that these wheelchair ramps for disabled people, you say, that's terrible spending money on people in wheelchairs. We should give jetpacks to the able-bodied. That's what we should be doing.
2 points to Jeremy. Francis, listen to this music.
sidewalks in the street. The concrete and the clay beneath my feet begins to crumble. But love will never die, because we'll see the mountains tumble before we say goodbye, my love and I.
Francis, who's paving the way to environmental success?
I think it's a Japanese invention, which is coming over here. These new thinking paving stones, which can eat, is it nitrogen dioxide?
Mm.
Or something of that kind. And not only can people trip over them, but they also get absolutely chock full of this fantastically poisonous gas. So when you trip over with your face on the paving stone, you die within seconds, quite painlessly. And they're going to be all over streets in Britain quite shortly, I believe. Because they're not planning to change them all that often. You'd think you'd have to change this every week. It would be absolutely filthy and black and stuff. But they said it would cost about every 10 or 15 years you might get around to changing them. And they must have absorbed an awful lot in that time.
Are they like big odour eaters then? They soak up all the... Oh, that's quite good. And that's a new thing, is it?
Oh, it's very, very new indeed, yes.
So what do they normally eat then, paving stones? They forage, don't they? Of course, the urban paving stone is a different breed now from the rural one. So it eats Kentucky Fried Chicken instead of badgers.
The Japanese company Mitsubishi has developed paving stones which will actively remove pollutants, particularly nitrogen dioxide emitted by car exhausts. The paving stones will be coated in titanium dioxide, a chemical most often used in toothpaste. So now you'll not only be able to breathe clean air as you go to work, you'll also need to take your shoes to the dentist much less often. So 2 points to Francis. Jeremy, which former cabbie will soon be lording it over all of us?
Well, the only famous cabbie I can think of is Anne Widdecombe.
It's a bloke from Budapest. He's a Hungarian who had that Earl of something in the back of the cab the other day and became him.
Right.
Do you want his full Debrett entry as well?
Oh, yes. Earl Bostic.
What? No, Breddleben and Holland. He's the most senior member of the Clan Campbell, this Hungarian cab driver, apart from Naomi and Alistair.
I was hoping...
And Alistair's already got a title, of course, several titles,
what,
I believe.
What title?
Most of them unprintable.
What's happening? What are you talking about?
Hungarian. I was hoping we were going to get the question about the gladiator, that gladiator who's been made, you know, the most sexy man in film.
That's the Hungarian cab driver.
Was this cab driver... a genuine Scottish laird?
No, he was a genuine Hungarian. He woke up to be in... He's now in charge of Alastair Campbell, apparently. I don't... It's a funny old world.
It's something like a bad movie, but like The Prince and the Pauper or something.
Extensive research has revealed that the former Budapest...
No, I want you to explain it in your own words.
Huber Andras Campbell is heir presumptive to the earldom of Breddlebane in Holland. The name of Campbell will always be controversial in Scotland, where it's associated with the massacre of the MacDonalds at Glencoe, a horrible incident in 1681 when thousands of quarter-pounders with cheese were slaughtered in their prime. He will find the life of a cabbie is very different from that of a peer of the realm. Many cabbies spend night after night cruising dark streets in the vague hope of picking someone up. I'll give 2 points to that team for stumbling there, but one to Francis for getting it right. Alan, who achieved new heights with their out-of-this-world idea?
Oh, this is the wonderful British Space Project, who built the world's major firework. And they took this length of guttering with a pointed end to Nevada. And it went up about 9 feet, and they were all very excited, and they're going to try to put an ant up next. And it's the British Space Project. I've actually been there. It's wonderful. It's a little hut, and it's got a big orange for the sun and a knitting needle through it, and a pea for the moon, and a grape for the Earth, and they show you how it all works, and then they take you outside and throw the rocket up. And then you wait for it to come down again. It's the astronautical equivalent of the Greenwich Dome. It didn't cost much. Well, actually, it cost quite a lot. It cost about 100,000 quid. They're now trying to raise funds for some other dotty thing, like a tricycle around Mars, but it's a British space rocket.
They played, apparently, Land of Hope and Glory when it went up and it was successful.
They couldn't have played the whole of Land of Hope and Glory because before you got to Mother of the Free, it'd be back. it went up like that and came down again. It's a stick with a fire on the end. It's not anything serious. It hasn't got any Americans on it.
Being a bit unfair, it was a bloody enormous milk bottle they launched it from. A team of seven British enthusiasts claimed the British and European records this week by sending a homemade rocket 35,000 feet above Nevada's Black Rock Desert. The team were able to say they had last got higher than Mount Everest and were immediately fined £100 each by Anne Widdecombe. Before we reveal the final scores, let's have a look at the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
This is from my local paper, the Borneo Post. Largest English daily sale in Borneo, I believe. It's a front-page story headed, Why It Is So Hot Now. The story says, the unusual dry spell which started at the beginning of the month is due to the absence of rain clouds.
Eve.
This is from the Yorkshire Evening Post, and it's about a new bridge and public transport scheme in Leeds. Centenary Bridge over the River Aire is in the centre of Leeds and has been praised as creating a movement framework that enhances the spatial dynamic by forging links with surrounding areas and reducing severance. Spokeswoman for English Heritage explained that this meant the bridge allowed people to move freely from one side of the river to the other.
Jeremy.
Well, I still haven't had an adequate explanation into this Scottish-Hungarian taxi driver. And I'm not leaving this building until I'm enlightened. This has been sent in by somebody from Finland, who doesn't give her name, but it's from the Baltic Times. A recent UEFA football match in Kaunas saw local residents terrorised by about 100 sodden Scottish football fans. They spent the day prior to the match drinking in the bars and provoking local fans into fistfights. Kaunasites were displeased with the way police mollycoddled the fans. Officers were seen assisting one man to urinate in the street. And I want to know what he obligingly held.
Alan.
I saw this, Simon, in the Bristol Evening Post, and it says the newly appointed managing director of Pakenham Human Resources PLC, 38-year-old Denise Boulter, attended Bristol Grammar School and went on to St Hugh's College, Oxford. She had originally planned on a civil service career, but then decided she wanted to work with people.
Thank you all, and now let's look at the final score. Alan and Jeremy have 17 points, but Francis and Eve have brilliantly caught up and tied with 17 points. And before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Brecon and Radnor Express, spotted by Beryl Archer.
In a final bid to raise money for the town's hospital, the Messiah will come to Brecon Cathedral next Saturday.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz are Alan Corran, Francis Ween, Jeremy Hardy and Eve Pollard. The chairman was Simon Hoggett and the news is read by me, Corey Caulfield. The chairman's script was written by George Coles, Debbie Barham and Simon Littlefield. And the producer was Lucy Armitage.